Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 12, 2017. The Trump administration extends sanction against the government of Sudan.
I'm sure many others in the streets would be happy that at least the sanctions are not lifted today, because many Sudanese used it as a reward, an undeserved reward to the Khartoum regime, which is still curbing freedoms.
And the fighting around Pagak continues despite UN calls for both sides to end violence.
There's been active military engagement over the past week with heavy fighting around Matiang, north of Pagak, on July the 2nd. Reports suggest that the government forces are now in and around Matiang and approaching the town of Mae Wat.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Trump administration has extended the period to lift sanctions on Sudan by additional 3 months. In January, former U.S. President Barack Obama signed an executive order to lift sanctions on Sudan by July 12 if Sudan improves its human rights records and resolves armed conflicts. Omar Ismail is a senior policy advisor at the Washington-based Enough Project. He tells Ayen Bior, while Sudan has made some progress, the country failed to end fighting between the government and rebel groups in northern Darfur.
This is good news to me because this will give us a chance to look for more information and look at some of the less obvious issues that we were wondering about, meaning some of the counterterrorism cooperation. And it is interesting that in the comments of the State Department, at the bottom of it, the State Department statement, they talked about Sudan should adhere to all the UN resolutions with regard to North Korea. That is something that wasn't there for everybody to know. However, from now on, in the next coming 3 months, people will start looking at that and see if the two pariah nations have some sort of cooperation, to what extent, at what level, and what is the outcome of that. So this is the kind of chance that this 3 months will give us to have more information.
Previously, you personally called for at least 6 to 1 more year for the administration to really look at Sudan and its progress on the five-track program. Is 3 months a long enough time?
It is not a long enough time since we asked for 6 months to a year. However, it is something. We can't just strike it out and say, this is nothing. It will give us a chance to look at the dark corners, and also will give us a chance to bring in more people into the debate. And like we agreed earlier, that the jury is still out on the validity of sanctions and whether they are important in terms of changing behavior of countries.
And this is a decision that could potentially impact millions of Sudanese. Could you talk a bit more about how important this decision is?
It is very important, and I'm sure that now it is maybe the small hours of the morning in Khartoum, and people are waking up to this decision. So many people will be disappointed in the government. I'm sure many others in the streets will be happy that at least the sanctions are not lifted today, because many Sudanese used this as a reward, an undeserved reward to the Khartoum regime, which is still curbing freedoms and will not give people a chance to assemble, and still destroying churches in an obvious intolerance for the differences between its citizens. You know, it remains to be seen now that the annual reporting is stricken out at Section 11 in the new executive order. It remains to be seen what does that mean in terms of the decision itself. Is it going to be already a predetermined thing they're going to lift the sanctions 3 months? We don't know. Because I think if we are keeping the sanctions, then the annual reporting is important.
last month, in June, you argued for a new policy framework between the United States and Sudan. What did you mean by that? And how does this decision impact your argument?
We're still calling on new policy that is based on, you know, the leverage of the United States to be exercised to push Sudan to change in terms of, you know, its behavior towards its own citizens, and to change in terms of its strategy and combating the violence in the different areas of Sudan, because we believe that it's still the government of Sudan was stuck to the strategy of military solution to the problems in the contentious areas. We think that the U.S. should exercise more pressure on Sudan to look at the financial dealings of the ruling elite, what we call the violent kleptocracy in the country, and using the financial tools that we have, from fencing to all the other measures of anti-money laundering, to look into the dealings of Khartoum and the transfer of illicit funds between Khartoum and other countries and other bodies.
Omar Ismail is senior policy advisor for the ENAF project. He was speaking to Ayen Bior in Washington, D.C. earlier today. The head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan is condemning recent fighting between government soldiers and armed opposition forces around Pagak in Upper Nile, where troops loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar are based. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
UNMISS Chief David Sierra says heavy fighting in Pagak has forced more than 5,000 civilians to flee to neighboring Ethiopia.
South Sudanese citizens are fleeing in advance of government SPLA towards Pagak, which, as you know, is a stronghold of the opposition. There's been active military engagement over the past week, with heavy fighting around Matiang, north of Pagak, on July the 2nd. Reports suggest that the government forces are now in and around Matiang and approaching the town of Maywat.
Sierra says the continued fighting worsened the humanitarian situation across the country. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, said thousands of civilians were displaced from their villages due to the fighting, and called on all parties to uphold their responsibilities under international humanitarian and human rights law to protect civilians and to allow unhindered access for humanitarian organizations so they can provide life-saving assistance. Sierra says he is deeply concerned about the ongoing fighting.
The military advance by the SPLA is not in the spirit of the unilateral ceasefire declared by the government in May this year, when it opened the national dialogue.
Both sides of the warring parties have confirmed the fighting around Pagak, but blame each other for violence. Sierra is calling on the government to improve the security situation, especially in rural areas, so people can return safely to their homes and produce food.
The economic output in the country needs to be increased, and in particular agricultural production, which has fallen badly behind. But for that to happen, the security situation in rural areas needs to improve dramatically, so that people feel safe enough to return to their land and invest their time and money in planting crops. And it's particularly the case in the south of the country, which was once the breadbasket of South Sudan.
Sierra says 6 million South Sudanese, roughly half the country's population, are in need of aid. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A South Sudanese activist is calling on the UN and the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo to evacuate 30 South Sudanese civilians, including minors, who have been stranded in DRC since last year. The South Sudanese fled to DRC with Riek Machar after renewed fighting broke out in Juba in July. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
26-year-old John Aborkap fled Juba alongside former First Vice President Riek Machar when fighting flared up in the capital last July. Aborkap says he and other South Sudanese survived repeated ground and air attacks by government forces harsh weather conditions, sickness, and hunger for more than 40 days and nights until they finally arrived in Goma Dera Sea. Despite living in the Dera Sea's crowded Munege camp near Goma for a year now, Aborkab says he, along with dozens of other South Sudanese, have never been granted refugee status.
Since we arrived, we have been confined. We are in confinement where we are not allowed to move, which is just a very small compound where about 600 ex-combatants plus us are in hostage.
Aborkab says 54 civilians who fled with Machar, including women and children, live in Munugi camp. He says UN and the Congolese authorities tried to help them but cannot give them relief aid until they are registered as refugees.
We are trying to go out through UNHCR procedures, which Congolese authorities and UNHCR has been trying to put some registration now for us to get out. But up to now, no food yet. We are still in this compound. People are sick. People are kind of really desperately wanting to go out.
Aborkab is calling on the UN and the DRC authorities to immediately evacuate civilians in DRC. He is also asking authorities to help teenage Niel Lel Chan and Peter Gatkwot Jal, who have been stranded at Ebola International Airport in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, for the last 2 weeks. South Sudan activist John Penn Dingong, founder of an advocacy group for South Sudanese who fled their country during fighting, says his group is advocating for the relocation of civilians trapped by the conflict in eastern Congo, especially children and women.
It is also to stop the youth from joining politics, bad politics, tribal politics, and the ongoing war.
Dingong is calling on UN agencies, regional leaders, DRC and South Sudanese leaders to relocate the civilians who he says are in desperate need of assistance.
We are making it so that the children can be relocated and brought here to East Africa, and then we free them to join their relatives wherever they want to go.
Dingong says the displaced minors have not been enrolled in school since they fled Juba a year ago and says their hope for the future is fading. Dingong believes DR Congo's future is as unpredictable as South Sudan's in terms of political stability and security. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
A commander of the Ugandan police in Adjumani town says he has no information about South Sudanese rebels recruiting refugees in Adjumani district into their ranks, as reported by the media recently. Simon Peter Apiko has the details for VOA News from northern Uganda.
Late last month, the Kampala-based Observer newspaper reported that rebels trying to topple the Kiir administration were recruiting fighters from refugee camps in northern Uganda. South Sudanese in Bidibidi refugee camp told the paper that SPLA-IO operatives move from camp to camp, targeting youths in new settlements. Adjumani District Police Commander Kakere Adamulondo tells South Sudan in Focus his force stands ready to intervene should there be credible reports about South Sudanese rebel activities in Adjumani camps, which hosts hundreds of thousands of refugees.
We have not got about that information so far, and we are always vigilant and on ground to see that in case of anything of that nature, we cannot see the situation.
Superintendent Mulondo says as far as he knows, South Sudanese security operatives are not operating in his district either. Refugees claim their government has dispatched agents to the camps to spy on refugees and even abduct some of them. Mulondo says he is more concerned about ongoing fighting within and around the settlements, which may start out rather innocently.
And at times this one is out of maybe children who are also praying. When they fight as children, it ends up also attracting elders, both within the community and the refugee community and the host community.
The Adjumani police chief says fist fights and assaults are some of the most common reports police receive, but more serious cases also occur.
The most challenging case I've faced is where a refugee woman came around here stayed within and ended up stealing a child to take to the husband who is in South Sudan. She was deceiving the man that is pregnant when it is not true.
Mulondo says with the cooperation of South Sudanese authorities, the one-week-old infant was found and safely returned to its family in Uganda. But the suspect remains at large after fleeing back to South Sudan. In another incident, relatives of an underage South Sudanese girl came to the police alleging other relatives wanted to force the girl into marriage. Mulondo says he dismissed the case after the girl swore she was 23 years old.
When she came across the man, she realized that the man is not of her own interest. Now that's when she again reported to police that he's below 18 and being forced into marriage.
Mulondo soon learned her would-be groom was nearly 50 years old and terminally ill. Superintendent Mulondo says that amounts to defilement, a fairly common practice in South Sudan, but a serious offense under Ugandan law. In the camps, South Sudanese men found to be marrying girls below the age of 18 are often forced to separate from their spouses, especially when abuse or violence are reported. Mulondo called on South Sudanese refugees of all ethnic backgrounds to put aside their differences and coexist peacefully in Uganda and to respect Ugandan law. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Apiku in Adjumani, Northern Uganda.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, authorities in Bor have released youth who issued warning to UN agencies to evacuate Equatorians from that area. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your least favorite thing about your country?
Corruption and nepotism.
Really, I say politics. The way things are conducted through politics in our country, in my country, really, it's not the actual way I really want them to be done.
Things are expensive, like the food, everything is expensive. School fees.
Unemployment, people are hustling. I see many youths of my age, like there are no jobs. People are broke. We see that the guys who are so broke, and we see the people that have money.
Corruption, basically, which is done by the leaders themselves, you know. They are showing a bad example, especially to the young generation who are coming or who are going to be leaders of tomorrow.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Jonglei state government has released 15 youth arrested last week for issuing a warning to UN agencies and non-governmental organizations to evacuate their employees who are from Equatoria within 72 hours or face unspecified repercussions. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng reports from Bor.
Jonglei State Secretary General Benjamin Lem says the decision to release the youth was taken after the young men promised not to cause trouble.
They promised that they will not cause anything and they will not harm anybody in the street or anywhere. The youth promised that they will not support violence. They all, whatever they complain is always, it is some anger that came in them. But so they promised that they will be free and they will be discussing things with dry mood, no confrontation, as they stated last time in the paper.
In a letter to UN OCHA, the youth warned something would happen if UN agencies, local and international NGOs, fail to remove workers who hail from the Equatorial region within 3 days' time. Lem says authorities released the youth without charge because they apologized. He says the government officials will also address complaints from local youth about a lack of job opportunities.
If they can channel back the petitions in a channel that does not encourage violence, a channel that does not give conditions, a pre-will discussion that everyone is allowed to express the whatever complaints, then is the government will listen to them.
Ngang Pilif Malek, one of the youth who was detained for writing the letter, says he and his colleagues should never have been arrested, but he says they are glad state lawmakers are willing to listen to their grievances.
We wrote the letter through the government institution, the government failed to intervene and call us and just surprise us by arrest. Good enough, we were also released, and we said that, okay, we welcome the release, and we want to sit down with the government, seeing the government had intervened, said that we talked to them about our grievances, what we were complaining, because we needed things to be addressed.
Malwal Ateng, another young man freed from detention today, says he will remain peaceful but assert that UN agencies and NGOs operating in Bor should employ locals.
Seen from the day of the letter, there's nothing is happening. But we are sure that our brothers who are loitering with their fifas, they are peaceful. Those who have been employed are the ones who are having no problem. They have no problem because they were fly and they were employed. But the organization who are employing people, they are the ones who are forgetting the law of South Sudan. What did NGO Act talk about? Examples such as cook and cleaners and drivers, can they be brought from Juba?
Malwal says officials should address the concerns of young people because of the area's high rate of unemployment. He says if they do, it will avoid what he calls future inconveniences. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Yei, where foreign traders in Yei town are threatening to close down their businesses over what they say are continuous night robberies. More than 100 foreign and local traders met with Yei County Commissioner to demand more protection. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei town.
Yei traders say since the beginning of July, robbers broke into nearly 30 shops to steal goods and cars. Fisai Gabra, an Ethiopian trader dealing in general merchandise, says traders pay high taxes but get nothing in return from the government. Gabra says unless authorities protect traders, they'll be forced to close their shops.
We pay all the necessary offices. We pay county, we pay state, we pay the security organs also. But still now, we did not get a guarantee of security. 28 shops are broken.
Gabra says thieves have broken into his shop 5 times and stole all of his merchandise. He reported each of the incidents to police but says none of the culprits have been apprehended. Dawid Daglabran, another Ethiopian trader dealing in general merchandise, says in the past 2 weeks, thieves broke in at night and stole both goods and cash.
We are here in Yei 6, 7, or 5 years. But things happen repeatedly. The stolen oil, you bring from Juba expensive things, if people they are taking out 200,000, 300,000, no one can afford that money. Then the same people are always taking to the prison and they are releasing.
Taglabran says he is on the verge of closing his shop. Speaking Arabic, local trader Abu Samson describes how armed robbers break into shops.
A person comes with a gun, threatens a trader, and takes goods by force. Another thing is that they break shops, cut the roofing, and come through the roof and steal goods from the shop. These people are organized criminals.
Samson suggests the government beef up night patrols to improve the security around Yei town and protect traders' shops. Speaking in Arabic, Maliamungu Bosco, the Secretary General of the Yei County Chamber of Commerce, believes some security operatives are working in conjunction with the robbers and thieves.
We have seen a shop from where thieves stole more than 100 bags of sugar and jerrycans of oil and maize flour the same night. The thieves came with a car and loaded the goods and drove away. That means there are people benefiting from the activities of these criminals.
Bosco says even after the perpetrators were arrested, security agents often set the thieves and robbers free after just a few days in detention. Speaking in Arabic, Yei River County Commissioner Dennis Lasuba says local officials have formed a security committee comprised of all security agencies to apprehend the thieves and those who are working with them.
The national security, counterintelligence.
The national security, counterintelligence, police and prisons are working hard and tracking down those who have done such acts.
Most foreign traders in Yei hail from Ethiopia, Eritrea, Uganda, India and Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin. In Yei.
As the world celebrates World Population Day this week, some South Sudanese women say they believe in child spacing as a good idea, but they need to learn more about some birth control methods, including pills. Nabil Biajo has this story for VOA from Juba.
Joyce Christophe, who heads the family planning section at Juba Teaching Hospital, says culture and lack of knowledge about reproductive health prevent many women from accessing family planning services. 48-year-old Mary Kour is a mother of 14 children. Speaking in Arabic, she says, only when she lost her husband a couple of years ago did she realize the importance of family planning.
Family planning is good so that you raise your children in the right way. But what makes most of us stop producing children is economic condition. When you can't feed them or pay their health care.
Kour says she decided not to have any more children after losing her husband.
Some of us have money, but some have four. Like me, an example, I'm a widow, and because my husband is not around, I had to provide for my kids, feed them, clothe them, and take care of them.
42-year-old Rail Juan, a mother of seven, says she decided not to have any more children 4 years ago because her husband is irresponsible. But she also believes certain contraceptives like birth control pills are harmful to women. Speaking in Arabic, Juan says she prefers the rhythm method over taking birth control pills to control the size of her family.
Those pills can cause health problems. A woman should not take them. She can do the math according to her period and only sleep with her husband on her safe days, that she will not get pregnant.
25-year-old Philip Deng says birth spacing is good, but he opposes any form of contraceptives for his wife.
If she want to take the medicine, you have to talk with her. If she will not listen to you, or if she will not hear that advice of you, you have to leave her and you tell her that from downward, I don't want you to be my wife.
Joyce Christophe, the head of the family planning section at Juba Teaching Hospital, says she normally advises mothers to wait 2 years after their last baby before they can conceive another.
We've said it is good when the woman can space a child at least after 2 years if it is normal delivery, if she delivered normal. And then if she was done the cesarean section, let her at least stay for 2 years and a half or 3 years.
Christophe says many South Sudanese women face significant obstacles when trying to receive family planning services from the hospital.
The biggest is the lack of knowledge, because you don't have any information about family planning, and then others will start rumors in the area there. They'll say this thing can happen to you like this and like this, but that one, it is not true. Better to come to the hospital or to the health worker so that you can have information.
Christophe says other obstacles involve traditional South Sudanese culture and religion, which often inhibit women from pursuing family planning options. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with a song, with a Barry song by Freedom Boys. We've been listening to the Freedom Boys with the song in Bari language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. If you like what you're hearing, or if you don't like what you heard on the show, please drop us a line. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. That's southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us out on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.